You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, is wearable tech, you know, smartwatches and the like, are they causing cancer? We'll ask a doctor. Lactose intolerant? How about your reaction to gluten? What if I told you they're both good for you? Well, a guy will be on the show, and he'll tell you. Let's meet the friends. Shooting right from the hip, it's Gunzo Greg Spillane.
Hey, Phil, how are you? As the NRA has told us, guns make every place safer, right? Capitol buildings, bars, schools, which is why I'm going to tell you about the one place you definitely want to stay away from.
He's in a famous pop band and knows a thing or two about songs, but the other Chris Martin is here.
Not too long ago, Abraham Lincoln's original penning of the Gettysburg Address was auctioned off for about $12,000. Today, the original lyrics for the song American Pie by Don McLean hit the block. Take a guess at how much money you think it went for.
More or less. Are you going to say? You don't tell me yet.
Okay.
I just have a feeling it's more because
I'm real easy for giving you the punchline.
Because America is just that way,
yeah.
Right?
USA.
Yeah. Just think of the impact Don McLean made. Is it McLean or McLean? How do we say it?
McLean. Yeah, I think it's McLean just by the spelling of it.
It's pronounced McLean.
I always thought it was McLean.
Yeah, it's McLean.
Okay.
It's spelled McLean.
Yeah, it is spelled McLean.
Let's have a fight over McLean. This seems like a great idea.
Well, just like your name is spelled Chris Martin.
Right.
Chris Martin, right? Isn't that how we say it?
Yeah, from the old Martin show.
Yeah.
That's my favorite pronunciation. Well, stick around to see if he McCleaned house or not.
All right. Mr. Spillane.
Yes, sir.
Gonzo Greg, we're talking NRA, and don't they have a convention about this time of year?
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. Yeah, the convention is coming up, and that's a great opportunity for about 70,000 gun owners to congregate and buy and sell and talk about weaponry and so forth. And they're getting together. It's this week in Nashville, actually. And interestingly enough, in the interest of security, the NRA has decided that at the NRA convention, there will be no guns.
No guns at the NRA convention?
Do not bring your gun to the NRA convention. Well, no operational guns, is what they're saying.
But they're going to have to take it.
From my cold, dead hands.
Exactly right. Don't we all miss
that
guy?
Thank you, Chuck. Yeah.
damn dirty, filthy ape.
I spent about a couple of hours watching him the other day. You know,
really?
Walking down the mountain and walking back up the mountain.
Ten Commandments.
Grabbing the
this
tablets.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And then Edward G. Robinson, you know.
Sure.
Worship the gilded cow, see? Yeah,
believe he parted the sea with a rifle, if I recall correctly. I might have that
right.
wrong, I'm not sure.
That's exactly what he did.
A multi-level security plan went into works after the Nashville was chosen as the convention destination. And so, yeah, all guns on the convention floor, non-operational, firing pins removed. Yeah. And if you buy a gun, you got to go pick it up at a firearms licensed place or something and show your ID.
I have a question for you, Greg.
Mm-hmm?
Is it Nashville or Nashville?
I know it's Louisville because I live there, but I never lived in Nashville, so I don't know.
Right, okay.
Hey, Greg, this just in, by the way, you can no longer bring your comic books to Comic-Con or your lightsabers to the Star Wars convention either.
Good call. No. I think this is, it's going to keep make America safer.
What is the world coming to? You know?
Outstanding.
Why don't we just lounge around at home in our ladies' lingerie? I know you've got some.
I do, and we weren't supposed to
talk about it on air, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that out loud? My inner monologue is coming through, but we all know Lane Bryant, right?
Sure.
Lane Bryant
used to live up the block from me.
a store known for selling clothing for regular sized women.
Yeah.
They've actually campaigned a lot recently about the term plus size. They're not a fan of that.
No, you're just normal size.
Normal. That's American women, basically.
Yeah.
They've had a couple of social media campaigns based on hashtags like drop the plus, hashtag drop the plus and hashtag F your beauty standards.
Wow.
Their latest one is hashtag I'm no angel, which is kind of, I guess, a jab at Victoria's Secret because, they're kind of known for their whole angels, Victoria's Secret angels campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have gone as far to say as well, that's skinny shaming and that's not cool either. But they are, they've released a new line of bras, I guess, and the latest is the hashtag I'm no angel.
You know what's ironic, Greg, is that skinny people tend to have thicker skin than regular sized people. And
yeah, is that true, though? I don't know. Is that, how about the hashtag, oh my God, Becky, look at her butt. How about that? Let's put that out there.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Only it's butt.
Although that would consume a lot of the 140 characters you're allowed.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah.
Sure. Well, if you're consuming 140 characters on a regular basis, you're going to have a bigger butt.
Yeah, it's a good point.
All right. All good.
Yeah. But then, you know what? You watch the ladies on TV. They're on those shows where they go to get a wedding dress. You know, it was like $8,000, and they've got like $150 to their name. But the poor sap who's getting married, the groom, he's got to fork over $8,000, and that's his life savings. I mean, he's been saving up forever. Well, you know, now I can't get to work because I got to sell the car to buy your dress. Well, that's okay. I want my dress.
So it sounds like, Phil, you've watched that show.
I've got nothing but ladies at my house, you know? Got the wife and three daughters, four queens beats a joker in every case, but just the same. Oh, speaking of royalty, there's a wedding of note.
Well, sure. Yeah. If you could get your, like, if you're getting married, if you could get somebody to underwrite your wedding, how awesome would that be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, it was, you know, usually the bride's parents would pony up the cash for the ceremony.
I ain't paying $8,000 for a dress.
It doesn't still work like that? Isn't that still the rule?
Well, yeah, it's still the rule, but yeah, does it really happen?
Yeah, you got a Kickstarter for your wedding. That's what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations to Joel Berger and Ashley King, who have become engaged. So we were all very happy for them, of course, because we all know who they are, right?
I have no idea who Joel Berger and Ashley King are.
They are the Berger King wedding people.
Oh!
Who's catering?
Right, by a large stroke of viral internet-ness, having their wedding underwritten by Berger King.
Good for them!
Yeah, they got engaged, and so they get their picture in the paper, and they did their names the other way around. It would have actually been King Berger, but
yeah, right.
They did Berger King and had their picture taken by the local Berger King, and I think it's Springfield, Illinois.
Yeah,
and,
perfect.
So yeah, the whole thing kind of went viral. A couple people prodded Berger King a little bit, and now yeah, BK has stepped up to take care of all.
I'm
the
crashing that wedding.
Yeah, doesn't that sound awesome?
Just gave me a great reminder for my two friends, James Taco and Kristen Bell, and how they should go about operating their wedding.
Yeah, I wonder if the Burger King is going to be there, the guy himself in that creepy outfit.
Yeah, maybe he'll officiate. Yeah, that would be outstanding
because he's an aficionado. Of burgers, and fries.
And, it would be a whopper of a wedding. Hey, thank you. I'm sorry I said that.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Well, once I went down the corny joke road, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I expect you to follow.
So there's this dude named Don McLean who goes by the name Don McLean and wrote one world-famous song. And name another Don McLean song. Can you do it? Oh, our executive producer, Mike Starr, can.
Oh, he can. Yeah, but.
Give it to us, Mike.
Yeah. Oh, Vincent. And I remember Vincent.
How does it go?
It's don't even try it. You'll be asleep after the second lyric. And Dreidel, I can't say that I've ever heard that one. And I have the Don McLean American Pie CD at home. Is that song on that record?
There's more than one song on it, really?
Well, I mean, by the time American Pie is over, you're so exhausted. It's like 12 minutes long, right?
Or what's tougher to endure, that or the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Oh, God.
Oh, how dare you? I love that jam.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, that's a classic.
All right, so the original lyrics of the American Pie song, penned by Don McLean, spelled Don McLean, went up for auction. And Chris is going to tell you how much it made, more or less than the original manuscript of the Gettysburg Address, penned by Abraham Lincoln. You know who that was. Chris is going to tell you how much, more or less, next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Yes, you are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, and we thank you for that. And it qualifies you to be part of the friendship. Almost sounds like we're starting a cult here, Chris, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gonzo, have you joined
Drink
yet?
The Kool-Aid.
I'm no. not sure. Yeah. I'm yeah. still kind of after this whole Scientology shake
Welcome
up,
to
sure.
the friendship. Oh, you finally got out of that, huh? Gosh, did they keep your car and your dog?
I blew up the e-meter is what happened. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. I think we're all curious to know, since we already do know that the Gettysburg Address was auctioned off some time ago for about $12,000, the one written on a cocktail napkin by the president at the time, Abraham Lincoln. But America is interested in other things, apparently, other types of writing. And Don McLean wrote that song called American Pie. And it's a song about pie. Is that right?
I don't think it's about pie, Phil.
No?
No. But that's must be part of the innuendo that it's, music's up to the listener.
Yes.
It's up to you to interpret it how you want to hear
okay.
it.
Okay.
So let me tell you a little
it's
bit about this.
It's a song about life, let's be honest.
Sure. Yeah. And driving your Chevy to the
driving
levee.
Driving your car to places, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, right. Okay, good.
We should have played a little segment of it. Mike shaking his head.
Nope.
No, Mike nope. Stark is such a music aficionado, and he really has an appreciation for lyrics. You know, he likes Springsteen and, guys who are their lyrics speak to him on a visceral level about life, the experience of life, the heartaches of life, the every man's working man lyrics, that sort of thing. And Mike's into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And for me, I glaze over. Stop talking so much. I want to hear the music. I'm a different kind of guy. Like I like hearing the chops, and the lyrics tend to get in the way for me sometimes.
So are you saying Mike likes or dislikes the idea of good old boys drinking whiskey and rye?
I think he likes that idea.
Okay, good. Me too.
And so when I said it's a song about pie, he practically had a coronary over there.
Right.
He's losing it on me.
Did he offer any sort of explanation as to what the hell that song is about?
He's starting to double check why in the world he and I ever became friends when I said it's a song about pie. I mean, that's how he was... deeply touched in a negative way by that comment.
As he should be. It was offensive, Phil.
Was it?
Seriously.
Okay, well, I'll shut up for a minute, and
we
tell
covered
people.
The fact that it's a horrible song? Have we covered
oh,
that?
Oh, gosh.
Like
see,
that.
Now.
Really?
See,
a shot across and now, the bow.
You realize that he can turn off any of our microphones.
I know.
Yeah. All right, so the whole point of this conversation is that there was an auction. Tell us what happened.
There was an auction held by Christie's this morning. And it was of the manuscript of American Pie by Don McLean.
Yeah.
Now, this manuscript cleaned up with $1.2 million in auction earnings. $1.2 million, Phil. We were talking about the Gettysburg Address getting $12,000. This is literally, what is that, 100,000 times more. Yes, than the Gettysburg Address.
What is the matter with America?
It's the third highest auction price for an American literary manuscript ever. 16 pages, that's all that this thing is. And I have a question for you guys, because here's what Don McLean said about it. He's turning 70. He felt it was time. He said, I have two kids and a wife, and none of them seem to have the mercantile instinct. I wanted to get the best deal I can. Is he saying that his kids and wife don't make any money that he had to do this in order to bring in a little cash?
Yeah, I think so. If he was like every other artist out there, he's probably living in his van.
Down by the river.
Going down to town, trying to play in a smoke-filled shack where people show up and they have a drink. And back when he was writing songs, didn't people do this when they were listening to music?
I still do that.
You know?
But, yeah. The whole beatnik thing?
That little hip shake.
Right. I mean, Don McLean's kind of post-beatnik, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
By the way, the record for manuscript sales is held by Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone.
What did that bring in?
$2 million.
Can you imagine? What would you do with that? If you spent $2 million on Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone, what would you display that in
I'd
your
house? I'd display it, and then I'd stand in front of it with a loaded gun.
Yeah, would you really?
Day and night. Yeah, or hire a guard. $2 million. You have to protect that investment.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Because nobody's going to take that away from you.
Not except for from my cold, dead hands.
Yes, right.
From my cold, dead hands.
There he is again. Yeah, thank you. All right. Well, I'm amazed that it... Well, I'm more amazed that people only spent $12,000 on the Gettysburg Address.
Right, yeah.
Because clearly that's more important to American history, is it not?
Agreed.
Yeah. Is that held by a private owner now, or is that at least in a museum somewhere? Shouldn't it be?
No, I think it's in some guy's house.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, that's just wrong.
All right, let's talk about something that's even more important.
Okay.
Baseball. Yesterday was opening day for Major League Baseball, and I think the Dodgers are playing their first game today, but yesterday there was the first game of the season. And Hostess, you know who that is. They make bread, and they make the ding-dongs and the Twinkies.
Devil right? Dogs, ho-hos.
Ho-hos.
Zingers.
Yes, all of that. Hostess. We love Hostess.
So the great Twinkie drought is over, right?
Yes, it is.
Hostess is back and we have Twinkies and stuff again?
Well, Hostess noticed, or somebody over there at Hostess noticed that Major League Baseball was kicking off, that the new season was kicking off. So they sprung into action. So they got on the Twitter and they tweeted a photo of a cupcake with baseball frosting and the word touchdown.
Yeah. Nailed it.
That's outstanding.
People immediately started ripping on them for using a football term, and they went into damage control. They claimed it was on purpose.
They were trying to be funny.
It has to be on purpose.
It was a joke. Don't you see a joke when you hear one?
It's almost as big a joke as trying to watch the Dodgers on TV in L.A., but that's another story.
Exactly. A spokeswoman said, quote, "The touchdown line was intentional. It's fun and aimed at young audiences who are in on the running joke."
Oh, all right.
We're not sure what that running joke is because we're not young. They're saying their goal was to go viral by having people talk about how dumb the brand is, right?
Right.
At least they didn't claim that they were hacked, which might have been a better explanation.
Then just a good old joke?
Yeah.
I think it worked.
Do you think it worked? Well, it sure got us talking about it. You know who Pharrell is, right? He's a singer. He's got a big happy smile on his face because he's got that song, "I'm So Happy," right? Isn't that him?
Oh, yeah, that is him, right?
That is him, and he wears a hat everywhere he goes.
He's a hat guy. Yeah, he's happy hat guy.
Yeah, he's that hat guy.
Not just a hat either. It's like a 50-gallon hat.
And he's one of the judges on The Voice, and he's a likable guy. And he's a prolific songwriter. Any idea what his first hit song was? Anybody?
It wasn't Happy.
No?
No, it was Blurred Lines.
He's been at this for a while. No, how old a guy do you think Pharrell is? He's like 20-something?
20? He looks pretty young, but I'm going to say he's in his 30s.
You think so? Okay. Pharrell's first hit song was Rump Shaker by Rex and Effect back in 1992.
Oh, no.
He co-wrote the lyrics when he was 19. So we can figure out how old he was now. He was 19 in 1992. So
nobody said there'd be math involved.
Wow.
So that makes him, what, 48?
I'm somewhat frightened to realize that I'm familiar with that song, which is kind of scary.
How does it go? Because I don't think we have it queued up.
Oh, really? Yeah, I couldn't.
No, we don't.
I can recite it to you. But
we forgot to rehearse that.
Yeah, now I'm interested in hearing Rump Shaker.
Yeah? All right. We'll figure that out. Here's something I can't figure out. At some point, the farmers and the people that sell sesame seeds, you know what those are. We eat sesame seeds. They're on our bread, and they're in other products, and you can grind them up and make a smoothie out of them if you're into that. But sesame seeds are naturally dark brown. Did you know that? When you see them on your bread, what color are they? They're white.
Yeah, like light colored. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And so at some point, and I don't know if this is, do you think this was a racist thing?
I'm going to say sesame seeds are racist.
The farmers or the distributors, they bleach the sesame seeds. Why? So that they will be more palatable to our racist sensibilities? Is that why they bleach sesame seeds?
Well, I used to date a girl who bleached things.
Yes.
Oh, no. Wow. You know, so maybe they're trying to separate themselves from sunflower seeds.
I'm blushing.
You know? It's like, oh, these look too much like sunflower seeds. Let's change their color a little bit.
Yeah, you know, all those seeds, they look alike.
Well, okay, now let's cut them some slack because sesame seeds routinely are used on bread, right? On the crust of the bread.
Right.
And what color is the crust of the bread?
Brown.
And if the sesame seeds were brown, there'd be no contrast. You wouldn't notice that were seeds on there. And if you're not a fan of sesame seeds, you might eat them accidentally. You might inhale them. You might chip a tooth. Who knows?
Or there's a designer somewhere going, these seeds just need to pop, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Need some contrast.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. They need to pop. Come on. You've been going to these shows far too often. Hey, the TSA guys, Chris.
Yes. What does TSA stand for?
The Transportation Security Administration.
Well done, sir.
And do they keep the stuff they confiscate?
They keep at least the change they keep. If it's got your name or, you know, some sort of identification on it, then they get it back to you. But all of the change from last year, the TSA gets to keep. It adds up to a whopping $675,000.
You mean like when I drop a quarter?
You drop a quarter, you leave it in the bin where you just stuck your shoes and your belt. Yeah, the TSA gets to keep it because in 2005, Congress allowed forgotten money to be kept by the TSA to help fund security operations.
Smart. You're going to have a crazy day at the crane machine.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I got a question. Should we be concerned about wearable tech, you know, like smartphone watches? Should we be concerned? Is there a cancer risk? A doctor offers his perspective right here, next, on Phil Hewlett and Friends. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, Atta.com, and you're at our website, and there you can find all sorts of wondrous things, like our How to Listen page. And you may not know this, you can listen and, in fact, watch the show live. There are a couple of links for you to do that. Did you know that? Yeah, you can take a look. I didn't know Chris looked like that.
I like the How to
that
Listen
handsome?
Page.
Yeah.
The How to Listen page reminds me of my dad. Don't you know how to listen?
Yeah.
And if only he had a page,
right.
I would have known how to listen.
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly. And Dad, why does it show me how to watch on the How to Listen page? Do as you're told, not as they do
right.
or whatever. Don't
exactly.
do as I do, do as you're told. Is that what he said?
I think.
You know, the popularity of wearable devices is rekindling the debate on the safety of mobile devices. They're all over the place. Do you have one of those watches yet, Gonzo?
I don't. I'm not going to do the watch thing.
I don't think I am either because the older I get, the harder it is to see small stuff.
It's really small, and I'm not Dick Tracy, so I'm going to pass on the watch.
And people are going to be holding those watches right up to their eyes, you know?
Right.
Like, what are you doing? You know, shielding yourself from the sun? No, I'm trying to read my stupid smartwatch. Yeah, my email or whatever. I'm trying to make a phone call. Anyway, do you wonder whether wearable computers, you know, the kinds made by companies like Apple and Samsung, because we love those companies, right? Do you wonder if those things will be found to be harmful in the years ahead? Well, let's talk about it. And joining us to talk about just that is an assistant attending physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell Medical Center, and clinical assistant professor of medicine at Weill Medical College, the founder of Gainer Integrative Oncology, and the author of the upcoming book. In fact, you can get it now in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. It's called Gene Therapy Plan. Dr. Mitchell Gainer, hello, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
Am I saying it right? Weill Medical College? Or is it?
I think they pronounce it Weill. But
Weill, all right.
Close enough.
But in case their mom is listening, I want to say it.
And clearly a doctor rather than one of these TV doctors. You know?
No.
So we got a real doctor on
real
this show.
Real doctor, so if there's a real concern, we will get to the bottom of it. But Dr. Gainer, research suggests, at least the research we've been privy to, suggests that these devices are largely safe. Isn't that right?
That's correct. But, you know, nobody has ever really done long-term studies to prove the safety of wearable tech. And, you know, I think we just have to use some common sense here until we have those studies done, because even the data on cell phones has been conflicting. There was a large French study that was done that suggested there was an increased risk of brain tumors in heavy cell phone users. Then there was a Danish study that actually showed there was no increased risk from heavy cell phone users. What I tell all my patients is you should use a hands-free device because distance matters, and you can also use the speaker portion. But, you know, there is radiation in 3G. There's radiation in Wi-Fi. The closer it is to your body, the more you're going to absorb.
Now, what kind of dose of radiation are we talking about? And for the people that don't really understand, and frankly, I don't, is the radiation being delivered via radio waves, Bluetooth? Is there something coming off of the battery? I mean, what exactly is the root of the concern?
It comes both from the battery and it comes from radio waves, which are similar to microwaves. And so each device, if you look in the instruction packet on your smartphone, you're going to see each device has something called an SAR, that specific absorption rate. And so that tells you how much radiation is being absorbed into your body, and it's going to have a recommendation on how far they recommend you should keep the cell phone for your body. So most of the cell phones that are out there will recommend 10 millimeters, which is a sonometer away. The distance makes all the difference other than, you know, pressing it right against your head. The newer cell phones actually only have a 5 millimeter recommendation to keep it away. Bluetooth obviously is a lower form of radiation, so you don't have to worry about that as much. But, you know, the thing is, with wearable tech, people are still going to have their smartphones. People are still going to be carrying around their tablets. And these things are additive. And so the closer it is to your body, the more devices you're using over time, the more cumulative radiation you will be exposed to.
So should I be concerned? I keep my phone in my left back pocket all of the time. So is my left butt cheek doomed?
That's not as bad as what a lot of the teenagers are doing. A lot of the girls are keeping it in their bras. That, I think, is a horrible idea because you're radiating breast tissue, especially developing breast tissue. A lot of boys are keeping it just in their pocket, so you're radiating reproductive organs.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. It's much better to use a case or keep it in a backpack or a purse.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Gaynor. More and more, people are just shooting radio waves all over their house. We're getting wireless or Bluetooth speakers, and all of our telephones are on some kind of a wireless radio transmission wave. In the house, everything is transmitting something. Are we walking into... we're going to turn into the Incredible Hulk, right? We're all experimenting with gamma rays in our kitchen, and we're going to get fried by all this stuff. Is that a realistic concern?
I think, again, that's where common sense comes in. You know, people are going to have Wi-Fi. You're going to get Wi-Fi when you go into, you know, most restaurants or coffee shops. Most people have Wi-Fi in their homes. It's not a bad idea to turn it off at night when you're asleep. It's not a bad idea to keep your phones and tablets away from your body at night, preferably turned off. When you have your phone on airplane mode, when you're not using it, there's a lot less radiation coming in from it because it's not trying to pick up a signal.
So we shouldn't put the phone under our pillow as an alarm clock. Is that what you're saying?
You do not want to do that. And even people... or putting it sometimes under baby's pillows, to listen to relaxing music. A horrible idea because the skull thickness of children and adolescents is much less than it is for an adult, so they're going to get more into their brain. So that's something you want to be careful about. Distance is everything. Use hands-free device. Use speaker phones. Keep your Wi-Fi and devices off at nighttime.
Right. And again, we're talking about most of the research today. I mean, the initial research says the devices are largely safe, but you say, and lots of people say, we need more time. There needs to be a longer amount of time. But I wonder, again, Mike, I don't know if I'm being a cynic or just trying to look at this from a common sense point of view. We can't run around being scared of everything. I mean, we could say the same thing about things that haven't been around that long, like hybrid cars, for instance. Driving one of those might be causing cancer. LED lights in our homes, for instance. We haven't had those for very long. And should we fear them just for the reason that they haven't been around long enough for us to test?
I think you're making a good point. And the fact of the matter is, we can't control everything in our external environment. There are a lot of carcinogens out there, and the air we're breathing, the water we're drinking, the food we're eating. You can control, for instance, what's in your kitchen. And, you know, in the gene therapy plan, I have, like, the top five things you can do to prevent, radiation-induced damage, carcinogen-induced damage. There are a number of foods like garlic, that turns on detoxifying enzymes, helps armor your DNA against DNA damage. We used to think that you were born with the genes that were going to determine whether you develop cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's. Now we know that those genes are under your control depending on the foods or the toxins you're putting in your body. You want to put things in like turmeric. That's what gives curry its yellow color. Resveratrol, which is a chemical that comes from red grapes and black raspberries, that blocks a lot of tumor growth factors. So like you said, there are a lot of things in the outside environment we can't control, but we can control a lot with our internal environment, going to the most fundamental level, our DNA.
And that's your book, The Gene Therapy Plan. That's essentially what it's all about, is eating right to tell your genes not to make you sick?
That's exactly right. It's telling you basically that you're not at the mercy of the genes you're born with, nor are you at the mercy of all the carcinogens out there in the environment, that there are a number of nutrients and balances of nutrients and lifestyle factors that you can either put in your body and incorporate into your life that can change your genetic destiny. You know, a lot of people say, well, we don't have a crystal ball. In essence, you can create your own crystal ball. You can create your own positive future at the most fundamental level, which is gene expression.
Yeah, how about that? That's a fascinating concept, and it's been a fascinating conversation with you. Again, the book is Gene Therapy Plan by Dr. Mitchell Gaynor, and it's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, and it sounds like an amazing read that could change your life. And thank you, sir, for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right, more health talk next, but not with a doctor, in fact, but lactose intolerant, gluten intolerant. What are you, both? So you cut those out, you cut out the dairy, you cut out the bread, and all the other things with gluten, like beer and certain vitamins, and you're going crazy trying to keep track of all this stuff, right? Well, what if the research about lactose and gluten is all wrong? What if everything you know is wrong? That's what we're here for. Get ready for a healthy helping of an alternate reality. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Gonzo Greg Spillane is here. I know you didn't, but we're going to force you to do it a little later. And Chris Martin is here as well, the other Chris Martin. All right, so one thing that we strive to do here is to be accurate whenever possible, and I realize that it only happens from time to time. But we did that whole 15-minute story about Don McLean's song "American Pie," and it's because the song, Don McLean is the way I've always said it, and we did such a long piece on it because the song is so darn long.
Awful.
But as it turns out, our executive producer Mike Stark did a little more digging and found out that the accurate way to pronounce the guy's name, in fact, the way his family pronounces it, is in fact McLean, just like you said originally, Chris Martin. So kudos to you.
Well, it's just nice to know that it is one of those names that's phonetically correct
yes.
in its spelling, because there's nothing worse than reading a name that is clearly spelled one way, and then they go, no, that's not how it's pronounced at all.
That's right.
Can we now have a long, in-depth conversation about the song Chevy Van?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
All right, kick it off, Greg.
No, let's not.
Where do you want to start?
Incidentally, when you said phonetics, it reminded me that Gary Warner, our travel guy, is going to be on in the second hour, and he's in the Sticks somewhere. He's in the Tules up in the Pacific Northwest. He's not in Phoenicia, I just wanted to say.
Is he there on purpose?
Yes, he is. He likes the Tules.
Not like stranded there for some reason.
But let's talk about, you know, when you drink a glass of milk and then you've got that that orchestra playing in your belly for the next couple of hours, and it's embarrassing. You're in a meeting and you're trying to look serious, you're trying to close the deal, and all of a sudden it sounds like you're passing gas, but it's just, you know, kind of rumbling in your belly there, and everybody looks at you.
Yeah, the gurgle.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Like, do we need to clear the room or
it's,
or not?
Is it coming from the cheese and the milk and all that sort of thing? And then there's the whole gluten thing, too. I mean, a good glass of beer is full of gluten, right?
I want all the gluten.
Quit gluten.
Yeah.
But people are nuts about gluten and about lactose. And what are you supposed to do? Joining us live is a culinary instructor and registered dietitian nutritionist at the Art Institute of Colorado. They teach nutrition and dietary stuff at an art institute. I love that. Chef Andrew Dole. Chef Dole is here. Hello, Chef Dole. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. We're so pleased you're here. And you're here just in time. I'm starting to bloat, and I'm feeling a little gassy.
Could you clear the room is the question.
Yeah. So what in fact causes that?
You know, it is a group of sugars called FODMAPs, and they are readily fermentable. So they ferment really quickly in the gut. And that's why talk about clear the room is when you have, let's say, the lactose or the bread with the gluten or fruits and vegetables, that it happens really quickly. That rumbling in the belly you mentioned, the gas, the bloating, and it is fast.
Yeah, but it's just a little embarrassing, but is it anything more than that? Is it something to be concerned about?
You know, it's nothing to be concerned about from a health issue with having a FODMAP sensitivity. But with everyone jumping on to the gluten bandwagon saying, when I eat a sandwich or I eat gluten, I get really bloated and I feel terrible, there are some questions whether or not it actually is the gluten. So many people have something called non-gluten sensitive celiac reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're with a celiac disease, you actually have antibodies or your bowel actually have inflammation, and that's something that we can test. But so many people eat gluten, they have symptoms, but you can't test for it. And that would be the non-celiac.
Yeah.
And so with a FODMAP, because the fructans or these sugars are available inside the bread, the wheat, the rye, and the barley, or the sugars found in your lactose and your milk, it's something that 20% of Americans have. And that's quite a bit. It's about 64 million people.
Yeah. So it's a good club, and you should feel confident knowing that there are other people suffering the same orchestra in the belly problem. But if we, so what are you saying then? Should we even mess with our diet, or should we just eat everything and realize that this is a normal part of life?
No, because that's a miserable way to live. So yeah, it is a very large group of people. So you're in good company with 64 million. You're not alone, and there are some things that you can do to actually mitigate that. And through lots of studies right now that are coming out of the Monash University in Australia, which is where all of this originated with the research, it's an elimination diet. And I know that sounds terrible, but it's a very short-lived elimination because the FODMAP is called a low FODMAP diet for a reason. It's not a no FODMAP diet. A lot of the diets that are out there now, paleo, gluten-free,
yeah.
They're eliminating entire food groups for a very long period of time. And we know that that's not a healthy way to eat. With a low FODMAP, it's an elimination of all of the high FODMAP fruits and vegetables, which can be found. And interestingly enough, there is an app by the Monash University that's put out. It's about $7 to $9, and it lists all of the foods in a red, yellow, and green light format.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all foods that have carbohydrates are mostly going to have some type of FODMAPs. But here's the deal. It's individualized. So you, Aaron, Chris, Greg, you all can eat different foods and have a different reaction. So it's not one size fits all. So the typical step for it is to eliminate the high FODMAPs from your diet. It's suggested for about 4 to 8 weeks.
And so you're the person at the dinner table who's the militant food and calorie counter. You pull out the app and you're looking at the plate and people are saying, "Oh crap, he's not gonna eat what I made."
You know, you'd hate to be that person who shows up, but if it's that question of being uncomfortable, bloated, and not wanting to be there, and just simply saying, "I'm not going to eat your asparagus today," I think it's a reasonable thing to do.
Well, you know what? If all I had to do was cut out asparagus, I think that's a win-win for everybody, isn't it?
Well, plus, your pee doesn't smell funny, so that works.
You're right, Greg. I don't know why that happens. It's because it's a FOD. Tell us FODMAP, FODMAP. What does that stand for?
You know, it stands for fermentable oligo. Dimonosaccharide and polyol.
So I'm glad
what was that?
Yeah, I'm glad it's FODMAP.
Whiskey this week. Yeah.
Aren't we? We're going to stick with FODMAP. It's much easier.
It sure is.
Yeah, that's that list of sugars that will ferment in the belly quite quickly.
And celiac starts with a C. It's not a cute cartoon character, the silly yak.
No. Nothing silly about it. And celiac is completely different. The fructans, actually, are one of those FODMAP sugars that you find in wheat. And it's also found in garlic and onions. And here's the thing for, like, the gluten. Well, okay, so there is gluten, and it is the gluten. Well, there's a really good chance that it might have been the gluten plus the jam plus the banana plus the milk that you ate, because it's all cumulative. And I think that's the – you know, if we talk about anything with this FODMAP diet and what FODMAP is that it's a cumulative – effect on all of the foods. So, for instance, Phil, you could eat a half a cup of blueberries and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then I can only eat a quarter cup. But if we sat down and we had high FODMAPs, let's say we ate a little bit of beans, some garlic, some fruits, some blueberries, it's all cumulative. It's all going to add up. So we have to know individually what foods work for us and how much of them can we eat.
Yeah. And how do you do that? Well, there's that app, but is there some way simpler for people to just kind of research it a little bit? Is there a place? Do you have a website?
You know, I do have a website, but I don't have a whole lot of FODMAP information on there. Stanford Hospital and Clinics actually has a very nice low FODMAP diet outline. And that's the Stanford Hospital Clinics. You can Google that one for FODMAP.
Yeah.
And there are food lists out there. I suggest that you stick to ones that are either coming out from the Monash on their app or from Stanford, because a lot of people have made their own lists and they've started adding foods based on what works for them. And it's not exact.
Chef Dole, we have about 20 seconds for you to tell me about Body Fuel SPN. What's that about?
Sure. Well, Body Fuel Sports Performance and Lifestyle Nutrition is my private practice nutrition that I have in Castle Rock, Colorado. I focus on sports nutrition and weight management. Essentially, I think the only thing that's more important than nutrition and performance nutrition is genetics. So if you don't have great genes, you need to eat to perform. And I try to help people get bigger, faster, and stronger in multi-sport.
All right. Very good. Thank you, sir. That's Chef Andrew Dole. Hey, coming up in the second hour, would you drive a car that gets 2,500 miles to the gallon? That story and a whole lot more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, High school and college kids compete to build a better, way more efficient car. When you travel, do you like stopping in the small towns? Our travel guy loves them, and he'll check in from the Thule's. The friends are here. Gonzo Greg Spillane is with us, and Chris Martin as well. And I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. We love that you do that. We'll get things started now. Gonzo, I love artwork. I love sculptures.
You're a fan of art, or you're a supporter of our artistic adventures.
Yeah, you know, not so much the paintings that don't make any sense to anybody. However, they have some kind of deep meaning.
If you were to go to somewhere to see great art, where would your target destination be? Do you think?
Well, look, I've been to Italy. I've been to Rome. I've been to the Vatican. I've seen all of the sculptures. You know, I've seen the David. I've seen all
really?
Of that stuff.
Really? Like in person, you've seen that? That's
I've
awesome.
Seen it. He's enormous. And he's tall as well.
I was going to say, I think he's taller than he is enormous.
But anyway,
forget all that. Yeah, don't waste your time and money. Where you want to go for art, apparently, according to recent news, is St. George, Utah, everybody.
No kidding.
A hotbed
of art, huh?
A hotbed of art is St. George, Utah. There's some controversy there. They have a rotating art exhibition, so different sculptors bring in stuff into the, I don't know, center of town every so often. And now there is some controversy. They've already had a giant 30-foot-tall guitar made of scrap metal, which sounds pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
And that went over, I guess, okay. But there is some controversy over the newest sculpture, which is a large 5-foot-tall sculpture of a pink stiletto shoe.
Oh, in St. George.
In St. George, Utah.
Yeah. Pink stiletto. The shoes of the temptress.
Who commissioned that?
There in Utah.
Yeah.
There's an organization called Art Around the Corner, the Art Around the Corner Foundation. And most, I guess, of the sculptures and so forth come from the kind of surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll cycle these in and out. And right now the pink shoe is in, I guess, the center of town. And people like Brittany Carlson says, it's just very different than the art that we have in downtown St. George. It doesn't seem to go with the flow.
Wow.
Which is what art is about, I guess.
Yeah.
Some residents are quoted as saying it would be a better fit for, quote, Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm with them on that part. That should be in Hollywood. Maybe they should move it. That whole art around the corner thing, is there some deep contemplative meaning behind that as well, if we stop and think about it for a minute?
I think it's just actually because it was regional art, I think, is what they were going for.
Around the corner. So it's not art from your backside or anything like that?
Nothing like that. No, okay. I think that, I don't know how can you be against a giant pink shoe. It's kind of a strappy stiletto with open toe. It's very nice. I don't really see what the problem is, but maybe she's more into closed-toed pumps or something. I'm not sure what this lady's problem is. But,
could be.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, getting off on the right foot with that story. Thank you, Greg.
Ba-dum-bum.
And so these days, you know what? It almost seems like social media is putting bureaucracy out of business because you can just get things done so much quicker with a tweet or with a post on Facebook or something like that. Isn't that true, Greg?
And you can gauge things quicker. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and they're achieving new levels of getting stuff done, in fact. As this show's resident correspondent on all things divorce,
yes,
I'm excited to report that now you can receive your, you can be served, basically, with your divorce papers on Facebook.
Oh, that's
is
nice.
That like a Facebook app, an add-on, a plug-in or something like that?
Oh, no, maybe they'll get there. But yeah, recently there was a case in, I think this is in Brooklyn, a woman couldn't get a hold of this guy that she was in, I guess, married to and didn't want to be anymore. And I guess their marriage was never consummated for various wacky reasons that I haven't got all the way through here.
They forgot to have sex? Is that what you're
guess,
saying?
Yeah. There were some conditions of the marriage that weren't met, so nothing was consummated. And so she's like, I want to get divorced. And she didn't know where he was. He moved. His last available address was no good anymore. And so she went to court, and the judge said, okay, yeah, private message on Facebook. Send your divorce petition through Facebook, and there you go. So actually, a pretty amazing legal precedent has just been set because of this. You can now apparently just send your papers through through Facebook.
And did the judge go on Facebook and like the divorce post?
I think so. She is now legally able to change her relationship status on Facebook.
You know what? In life, you see a lot of people walking around. They've got bumper stickers. In some cases, they have tattoos. Certainly, a lot of people have T-shirts, and you see this in little comics and that sort of thing. The whole WWJD, what would Jesus do?
Sure.
And folks apply that question, it seems, to ridiculously absurd situations. For instance, let's just start here. Jesus is getting a tattoo. All right, run with it, Greg. What do you say?
Yeah, well, what would he get? What would Jesus get? Because lots of people get Jesus tattoos, but what would Jesus get tattooed?
WWID.
What would I do?
Probably. That's anybody who here is who's got tattoos? Anybody?
Just no, me? I have one, yeah.
You have one? Mm-hmm. He's got that little butterfly in his ankle.
Yeah.
All right, Phil, if you get one, what are you getting?
Oh, I'm getting an anchor with a banner on it that says "Mom."
Nice. You're going classic.
That's old school. This guy.
So there's this dude in England. He went in to get a Jesus tattoo. Apparently, after getting laser tattoo removal to get something else taken off to clear the space like on his arm. And he walked in, and he set it up ahead of time and got it's a big piece, and it's a very nice, it's a pretty good-looking tattoo. I mean, I wouldn't get Jesus on my arm, but...
It's like the face of Jesus, the whole...
Yeah, it's a bust, you know, from a medium shot, as it were, about $370 worth of Jesus tattoo.
Yeah.
And walked out without paying for it.
Are you kidding me?
kind of violating the whole thou shalt not steal portion of Jesus's teachings
there. Well, that's not very Christian.
No, but what's interesting, on the other hand, I think on his other hand, on the other arm, he has Only God Can Judge Me tattooed on that hand.
Well, there may be some judgment coming.
Maybe. It seems he's just using the God Jesus thing as a tattoo credit card, just to, you know, get in there, get out, call it good. But, yeah.
I don't know how he got out with his life. Those tattoo parlor owners are usually not too friendly about people trying to skip out on the tab.
Also, and he also stole like $1,000 out of the register while the guy went to close the back door.
Oh, so there's this whole thing, too.
Right, yeah. So
this guy's a class act.
Might be working the other side of that whole Jesus and the other guy bit, maybe.
Yeah, well, the whole idea of the tattoo in the first place and Jesus, it's kind of a contradiction anyway. If the body is your temple and there you are defiling it with the ink and all of that sort of thing, right? It doesn't make... If you're going to be literal about the stuff that's in the Bible, it doesn't make sense to get a tattoo now, does it?
Well, yeah, but if we were going to be literal about the stuff that's in the Bible, we'd all be in trouble.
Oh, that's true. That is true.
Let's hear it for the spaghetti monster.
Yay! That's in there, right?
Spaghetti monster, yeah.
Yeah. You know what else? You ever been to the IKEA? You follow the arrows and you have no clue how much longer it's going to take you to get to the checkout station.
Oh, my post-divorce continual existence is based on IKEA. So yes, absolutely.
And you could hang out there. You could bring the family and basically you could live there. If they didn't kick you out of the store,
I've often considered it. Yeah.
How about you, Chris?
Everything you need is at IKEA.
More or less.
To build a house, to eat.
Yeah.
To drink, to live.
Oh, I love those Swedish meatballs.
Yeah. You know, those are made of horse meat.
Are they?
They were for a little while.
Not in America.
I think they were caught.
It was in some other country.
It was another country.
Like Denmark.
How do we know they separated the horse meatballs from the meatballs properly they left the distribution plant?
I'm
going to
go
here.
On record and say, I don't care.
They were good either way.
Them meatballs is tasty.
So
what's going on with IKEA, Chris?
Well, IKEA in Beijing, China, all its Beijing, China locations, have officially banned napping on the beds and furniture of their store.
What? Oh, it's one of the whole reasons I go.
Yeah, I saw some pictures of it. It's classic. Shoppers were literally taking the do-it-yourself logo motto to extremes. They were literally constructing their own bedrooms right there inside the store. Like they would put the bed and the sheets and the pillow and the blankets, and then they'd put a little closet area over there next there so they could hang their coat up, and then they would just pass out in the store. They're saying over there in China that they're going through a napademic, and that lounging shoppers
did not say napademic.
Oh,
nobody,
they did.
They did not.
There's not a Chinese word. There's not
for
a
napademic.
There's
yeah.
a character for it.
A character in Mandarin for napademic,
and that's how it translates into napademic. Yeah,
wow, that's classic.
They say they have lounging shoppers literally occupying every one of the beds and couches during a typical workday, which I think we can relate to because you know,
yeah.
It's, the places are huge.
I wonder if there's
Shopping's
a large
tiring.
Percentage of people that live in and around Beijing where perhaps the economy is not so great. And maybe a nice comfy bed or a couch in the IKEA is a step up from what they're accustomed to at home.
Yeah, I would agree with that because I've seen China and the Beijing area. Mm-hmm. And yeah, IKEA looks pretty nice compared to some of those high-rises.
Yeah, all right.
IKEA, by the way, says that they are just happy that people feel so at home in their stores.
Yeah.
so at home, they could take a nap.
They don't really think that because right. the next thing is going to be people, you know, hey, let's go for it, IKEA. Let's, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Join the IKEA club.
Name two baseball teams that have very similar jerseys, if you're not paying too close of attention. Not their logo, but the jerseys. And sometimes the home or the away, it almost looks like the same team.
Oh, geez.
You do that?
I'm thinking of another one with pinstripes so then I can compare them to the Yankees.
What if you went blue?
Yeah, blue, you'd have to go with Cubs and Blue Jays?
Cubs, Blue Jays, Cubs, Dodgers, maybe?
Cubs, Dodgers,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, anyway. What the heck is the matter with Cubs fans? You're going to find out something that you may find this repugnant. You may be completely grossed out when you hear what Cubs fans are doing. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, this week is the opening of Major League Baseball. There was a game or two yesterday and a bunch of games today, and we're off and running.
So we can start napping. That's baseball. Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, although it's going to be faster this year, they say. In fact, they're actually talking to the owners about putting a timer on the pitchers.
Really? Timer on the pitchers, timer on the batters in between pitches.
Yeah.
Releasing weasels onto the field, setting stuff on fire, tackling.
Well, like basketball has the 24-second clock or the 40-second clock. How long is the clock?
24-second clock in basketball. 35 seconds in college.
That's right. That's where I got confused. But 24 seconds. So you got to run down and pass a couple times or give it to Kobe or somebody like that. Don't pass at all and just shoot.
That's why it's so fluid.
Yeah. Yeah. So they want to do that with baseball and get people out of there while they're still drunk. And out on the roads.
It's not going to happen. You know, baseball's too slow because the pitching is so good. Nobody can hit. Very few guys are hitting the ball. You know, I read a statistic. Opening day happened. There was whatever there was, 19 games. The batting average across all 19 games was under 250.
Yeah.
The batting average across the entire thing. There was something like four shutouts. So baseball's got a long ways to go if it's going to be an offensive sport, but maybe that's not what people are into it for. But I will say
what they're into it for at the ballpark is for drinking beer.
Drinking beer, eating hot dogs,
yeah,
hanging out with your buddies, screaming obscenities.
But you don't want to miss a bit of the action because you go to the bathroom and the line is like through the around the building, right?
Yes, you can't go during the seventh inning stretch. And it's even worse if you're over in Chicago because Wrigley Field is in the middle of a massive renovation, Phil.
Oh.
And what this means is that their opening day game yesterday against St. Louis, they were down to two restrooms.
Oh.
Two.
Two restrooms.
For 40,000 people, right?
Yes. The number above one and below three.
Well,
and
three would be, yeah.
35,000 beer drinkers flooded the hallways during breaks and then flooded the bathrooms, literally flooded the bathrooms.
So what did people do?
They kept peeing into full urinals, and not only that, there were so many of them that couldn't get into the urinals and into the bathrooms that they just started using beer cups. And there were hundreds of beer cups stacked up outside the bathrooms.
Yeah. Oh, were they peeing in their seats into the beer cup while watching the game?
I think they were doing it in the hallway. Most of them were doing it in the hallway somewhere near the restrooms.
Thanks for your discretion, Cubs fans.
At least you're using a cup. Yeah.
Well, it was either that or pee in their pants. I mean, what are you going to do if you can't get in, literally?
They used to talk about the bleacher bums, you know, at Yankee Stadium. They'd roll up their program or their newspaper or something like that, and they'd pee into the newspaper and then just toss it on the ground.
They just don't want to leave their seats.
And so when you went into the bleachers in left field or right field or wherever it was, it smelled like urine. And if I recall this accurately, it was that way for a while at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles.
Chicago is just like, hey, look, we put lights in the place. Get over it. You know?
Yeah, right.
What do you want? You want bathrooms too? Come on.
Yeah, but how good is that hot dog, huh? Yeah. How good is that hot dog?
All right. If you were to replace the ivy on the brick walls with some other plant, some other vine, if it weren't ivy, and tradition says it has to remain ivy.
Yes.
Right? But if you were to replace that, what kind of plant?
Yeah, the tradition so they can keep losing. But okay.
Oh, that's easy. Bougainvillea.
You'd put bougainvillea
on
there?
Oh, yeah. I'd have a beautiful mixed array of the pink and blue bougainvillea all the way along the back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe a wall of urinals might be something.
you know why, Greg? You know why I'd choose bougainvillea?
Why is that? Yeah.
Because I really feel like they need to do something to make that wall pop back there. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Keep going back to that.
Yes, sir. That's a callback.
You guys are sick. By the way, speaking of sick, health.com talked to an expert about the best things to eat or drink when you are sick.
Okay.
And here are five different things, depending on what's wrong with you. If you're nauseous, and isn't that frightening? You have no idea what to eat or drink when you're nauseous, right? If you're nauseous, things like saltines and pretzels are the best because they cut down on stomach acid. But avoid alcohol, caffeine, anything greasy, and anything spicy. And I don't think I need advice on that. If I'm nauseous, I'm not thinking about a big spicy burrito.
Yeah, your body.
Kind of common sense, right? Yeah.
Yeah, your body naturally tells you that that's not good for you
in those situations. If you're constipated, what should you eat? Mm. You should eat anything high in fiber and drink a ton of water. Oh, now that makes total sense. If you're thinking common sense, then that's what you think of. Or if you're the opposite of constipated, and I think we all know what that means, remember the acronym BRAT, B-R-A-T.
Yes.
Bananas, rice, applesauce, and toast.
That will help clear up the opposite of constipation?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. If you've got the diarrheas.
Yeah, the runs.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, for a sore throat.
The Hershey squirts.
He went there.
Are you just about done?
Blowing mud.
Oh, gosh. You finished yet?
Taking the Browns to the Super Bowl. All right, that's enough.
Yeah. For a sore throat or a runny nose, what's the point of doing any of this now, right? There's no point. No, there are other sicknesses. Maybe you'll have some phrases for us. Sore throat or runny nose?
Yeah, okay. What do we do to fix that? I'm actually curious about that.
I thought you had a term for that. Drink warm tea, not hot. Hot tea can make sore throats worse. So can juice or anything acidic. So, and obviously don't eat something scratchy like chips that might irritate your sore throat. So warm tea, not hot. If your entire body aches from the flu, eat something with a lot of magnesium like nuts, bananas, beans, leafy greens, and avocados.
Hmm.
Those all sound good.
But avoid
my plan just to drink it away is that not a good idea?
Avoid caffeine and alcohol because they'll make you dehydrated.
But if you think about it from the fact that you'll just wake up 3 days later and probably be cured.
Yeah. Right, it's time travel. I've traveled forward
exactly,
in time.
Yeah.
My disease is gone
and
there, no germs can survive in my bloodstream because it's pure alcohol.
And here's the last thing to get rid of a headache. Since you're drinking all that alcohol, I suspect you've got a headache from time to time. To get rid of it, drink a full glass of water. So that's, 8 ounces?
Crazy.
Is that a full glass?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or is it 16 ounces?
I don't know. Now I'm wondering that same thing. I think it used to be 8, but now.
Yeah, if you get one of those big glasses, you know, the kind that, real men drink out of giant glasses.
Yes.
Right?
Mugs.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, drink a full glass of water, however much that is. And go ahead and just see if you feel better in 20 minutes.
What, that's it? Drink a glass of water and see if you feel better?
Yeah, you forgot about the 1,000 milligrams of ibuprofen.
Yeah, right. Here's the thing. I have a feeling that headaches generally go away in 20 minutes. But sometimes, now here's one thing that is different from all the others. A little caffeine can help get rid of your headache as well. So you should drink one full glass of water for every cup of coffee that you have, however. Okay.
All right.
And sometimes that headache is because you haven't had your cup of coffee today.
That's exactly what I was just thinking. You're withdrawn.
Yeah. And don't put any artificial sweeteners in your coffee because they tend to make headaches worse.
And always use an actual real fresh lime in your martini is what I always
yeah, like. Yes. Fresh lime.
Like a tonic.
Gosh. Hey, our later in the program, we're going to hear from a college kid who's really smart, and he can get so much mileage out of a car, it's going to make your head spin. That's coming up a little later. But one guy we love talking to, and we talk to him every week, it's our travel guy, and he continues to wander aimlessly through the Pacific Northwest. That's what he's doing for like 4 weeks. Wouldn't you like to be able to just wander? And he's about to check in from somewhere out there. We have no idea where. Next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Hey, hello, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Nice to meet you. And we're glad you tuned in. It's an excellent time to listen because joining us live from somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, or the Northwest, maybe not so Pacific, it's hard to say, but he's out there wandering around and having a great time. It's our travel guy, Gary Warner. Hey, Gary, where are you today?
Hey, Phil, I'm outside of McMinnville, Oregon. I hope the Skype is working pretty good. We're out here a little bit in the countryside.
McMinnville. Well, apparently they have the best internet on the planet because you sound great today.
That's great. You know, if you get near enough of a good signal these days, Skype is a wonderful thing.
But McMinnville, how many towns have a Mick in front of them?
I don't know. You know, every town has a McDonald's, so, you know.
That's true.
Quit being racist, Phil. Come on.
Yeah, right. We'll cut it out. But, it's just a strange name for a town, McMinnville.
Well, it's named after a town in Tennessee, and one of these guys who basically was in Tennessee took the Oregon Trail out here for better farmland, and when he gets here, he names the town after his hometown. That's why we also have Albany and Salem and,
right.
And you know, all those things
but
out
McMinnville,
here.
But McMinnville, it sounds like a town that's made, everything's made out of wood. Not the good kind, like the kind that has a lot of splinters.
It sounds like some sort of bizarre little thing. But, you know, I'm always looking for places off the beaten track, you know, that are sort of a little bit fun and bizarre. And McMinnville was one of the early stars of a series I did for my old newspaper called Call of the Small, which is about great little small towns in the United States. And this was in, I believe, the very first one, because there's so many interesting things going on here.
Like what? What's so cool about McMinnville?
Well, let's start out. It's about 35 miles southwest of Portland. And it's the heart of the Oregon wine country. This is where all the Pinot Noirs that are been hitting the shelves from Oregon come from. There's a lot of rain and a lot of heat. So everywhere you go in this area, there's vines.
So you're drunk right now is what you're saying.
Well, that's the one. Not only drunk on wine, but it's also famous for McEnamin's Hotel Oregon, which is this old sort of like pre-World War II hotel that's in the middle of the downtown that's owned by this brewery chain that is famous for taking odd public buildings and turning them into hotels. They turned an elementary school near Portland into a hotel complete with blackboards. There's one of these, I think it's an Eagles or, you know, one of those fraternal order lodges that's been turned into a hotel. This is just a regular old hotel, but they don't really spruce it up. Like, this is not like your, you know, five-star hotel.
It's a little rugged.
A lot of the rooms you have to walk up the stairs, which after being down in the bar can be a little bit tough. So basically, we're starting out right off the top here. We've got, you know, wine and beer. Okay, so you can get a little bit goofy. Now, maybe that is why in 1950, this place went on the map Life magazine and the whole thing, for one of the most famous sightings of UFOs in United States history.
What, the aliens want our beer and our Pinot Noir?
Well, at the time, I think they just wanted our farmland, you know, out there. But if you go online and you do McMinnville and UFO, you'll see this photo and you go, oh yeah, I've seen this photo.
I'm doing it
a bunch of times. And they continue to celebrate the UFOs with a festival every year, where they go up on the rooftop of the Hotel Oregon and you know, invite the UFOs down.
Oh, that
depending
photo.
Depending on how much they've had to drink.
That photo was debunked as a hoax, right? It was some guy with a Frisbee, and that's all it was, right?
You know, I there are so many of those, I forget which one is which, you know. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not a UFO fanatic or anything like that. But still, it's an excuse to have a party, okay? And that's not the only party they have. They have a citywide turkey roast, and they also have a citywide sort of like the old Happy Days, you know, driving around the circle type thing, because the downtown is like something right out of central casting for, you know, 1950s America. It really hasn't changed at
like
all.
Like Mayberry, huh?
Like Mayberry. So, yeah. So far we've got wine, we've got beer, we've got UFOs, we've got a turkey roast,
yeah.
We've got a great little downtown, but we haven't even gotten to the biggest attraction out there yet.
What's that?
That is the Evergreen Aviation Museum. And you may have heard of the star of the Evergreen Aviation Museum, and that is the Spruce Goose.
Oh, it used to be not too far from where we're located right here in the beautiful L.A. radio studio.
That's right.
On the L.A. Harbor.
I'm a Long Beach boy originally, and, you know, it was out there for a very long time next to the Queen Mary. And they tried to make it a tourist attraction. It didn't work out. And the folks at Evergreen Aviation Museum bought the Spruce Goose, had it, you know, sectionalized. It's basically, they call it the Spruce Goose because it's made out of wood. I don't think it is actually spruce. I think they just actually use spruce because it rhymes.
I believe it's poplar. And
poplar.
Try rhyming things with poplar.
You know, you are a
poplar,
wealth
right?
of information. Yeah. You know, the poplar pilot or something like
the
that.
The poplar
anyway.
Shift.
So they floated this thing up to Portland, and then they drove it, you know, having to take down all the wires and everything like that, to the middle of this museum in the middle of all these wine vines in McMinnville. Now, you may ask, why is there this huge museum with not only the Spruce Goose, but we're talking about an SR-71, the fastest plane ever, mm-hmm. an X-15, a Messerschmitt 262, the German jet, Spitfires, a Fokker triplane.
What kind of triplane?
Yeah. You guys, you know, everyone always likes to this. That company's still there. It's Fokker. They're still in business.
Meet
the triplane, the Red Baron, you know, the guy who shot down Snoopy. He flew that thing. Plus, they have an Apollo space capsule and a Gemini space capsule and a lot of other great stuff. And what it is that Evergreen Aviation Museum is run by Evergreen Aviation, which is a company that, when we had deregulation back in 1979 of the airlines and the oil crisis, all these airlines basically got nuts and said, we've got all these planes that we can't, you know, pay for anymore. And they parked them all out in the desert or out at George Air Force Base near San Bernardino. And Evergreen stepped in as a company that bought planes and then lease them to people who are trying to start up airlines. And, you know, you can go through a list. There's a great book called Deregulation Knockouts. Everybody tried to start an airline, basically, from about 1979 on.
Yeah, I forgot. These guys, I forgot to start one myself, frankly.
Well, you know, you would be in the poorhouse if you tried. But you know, I've flown many. I can probably think of, you know, 20 airlines that don't exist anymore. Presidential Air and things like that.
Sure.
You know, but basically they made a lot of money, and so they spent part of it to build this really, really one of the best aviation museums in the world. And I've been to aviation museums in Britain, in Russia, in Germany, in Asia.
And how about the Smithsonian? The aviation museum at the Smithsonian?
Oh, that's fantastic. Both the one downtown in Washington and then the addendum they have out at Dulles Airport.
I love looking at
the aviation museum is in a town that does not have an airport.
It has an airport, but it's not a commercial airport. It's an airport, basically. It's an airfield that's used by Evergreen Aviation.
By the way, I just double-checked my recollection of what the Spruce Goose was actually made out of. It's not made out of poplar. It's made out of birch.
And Birch.
And you can't come up with a good name for
Birch.
Oh,
I could come up with a good one, but I don't think I can say it on the radio.
Oh.
You know.
Fine.
Rhymes with itch.
Yes.
Anyway.
You've been drinking. Let's remember.
You know, it's great to be out on the road. I am telling you, it is really great to be out on the
Now, you're in the Tules, and so far, is there any camping, hiking, fishing, anything like that?
Oh, there's all, you know, I mean, out here, you know, we all up here in Oregon, we're sitting around our coffee houses this weekend reading about how Southern California is going to drive and blow away on the cover of the New York Times.
Yeah.
And it's raining like, you know, like hell here. But, you know, everything's green. There's waterfalls. There's these great state parks. Oregon Caves National Monument just to the south of here is just one of the most fantastic places out there. Crater Lake.
Oh, yeah. Got to see
you know,
that.
We talked before about Mount Hood, which actually isn't even a national park. It's a national forest site, mm-hmm. but they got that great Timberline Lodge up there. Plus, you have the whole coast that's just about, maybe about an hour drive from where I'm at right now.
Did you find the Bridge of the Gods? Did you find it? Remember
Bridge
last
of
week?
Gods. Wasn't that a Led Zeppelin song?
Yes, exactly. You didn't know what that was, and if you're driving up to Mount Hood along, you know, the Multnomah Falls, that side on the Oregon side of the Columbia River Gorge,
yep.
there's a point where you could cross over the river into Washington on the Bridge of the Gods, and they let one car by at a time, and you pay $1.50 to go over the bridge.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was amazing when I was in Portland a couple of days ago. I was staying in a hotel where everything that was I wanted, like Trader Joe's and the restaurants and everything like that,
yeah.
the closest ones were across the bridge into Washington.
Yeah.
So I would go into Washington. Now, the only problem was in Washington, they have a sales tax. In Oregon, they don't have a sales tax.
Yeah,
so
maybe you
drive a little bit farther. But the funky thing in Oregon is that when you go to the gas station, they still have guys that pump the gas for you.
It's required. It's the law in Oregon.
It's the law. Now, a lot of people go around it now. It's not like it was like 10, 15 years ago where they used to like tell you, get away from there. Get away from your car.
Because you might let the fumes come out because you're not a trained technician.
Well, the guy who was filling up my car, he couldn't figure it out, you know, because he kept on going click, 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 and he wasn't putting the nozzle in. I mean, they're not exactly, you know, hiring petroleum engineers to do this.
They're not, okay.
But hey. but so they're trying to get rid of this thing. But I think it's a tradition a lot of people like.
All right, let's wrap it up, happy guy. Where are you headed to next?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm on the road, man.
I love that about you.
So we will have to see next week. I just don't. Plan on being back home for a while, and we'll just see where the road takes me.
All right,
we'll
very
talk
good.
Next week. Okay,
Gary Warner, thank you, and be safe out there.
I will be safe as I can. If I'm going to have that beer or wine, I will stay put. Okay,
thank you, sir. All right,
take care, guys.
Same to you. All right, high school and college geniuses are figuring out how to design a vehicle that will drive the farthest on the smallest possible amount of fuel. And there's a big competition between schools. It's called the Shell Eco Challenge. And you'll hear from one of the top contenders next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Oh, we love you for listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. And it's a good thing we have smart young men and women in high school and college figuring out how to make the world a better place, because God knows we're not doing much about it. But I want you to meet somebody who thinks he and his team are going to shatter records in the upcoming Shell Eco Challenge. Let's find out what that is. And welcome to the show, the president of the Cal Poly Super Mileage Club, Sean Michael. Hey, Sean, how are you, buddy?
Hi, how's it going?
It's going even better now that you're here, sir. All right, so Cal Poly, is that Pomona or Slo?
We're in San Luis Obispo.
That's what I thought. Those punks over at Cal Poly Pomona, they don't have nothing on
Bite
slow,
your
right?
tongue, sir.
Well, is that where you went?
No, but I visited there once, so okay. I just feel a I feel a tie like there now.
They have they have sheep at Cal Poly Pomona, by the way. All right, Sean, thank you again. We're just going to assume that you're one of the smarter kids over there at Cal Poly SLO.
And, I hope so.
Tell us, what is the Shell Eco Challenge exactly?
So the Shell Eco Marathon is a competition where high schools and colleges get together to compete prototype vehicles to get as much fuel efficiency as possible.
And just crazy amounts of fuel efficiency, right? Not like 100 miles per gallon, crazy amounts.
Yeah, we've consistently broken 1,000 miles per gallon over the years. The record in the America's competition is over 3,000 so far, and it's improving.
Now, this is a car that goes about 5 miles per hour and has a big sail and a mast on it, right?
I was going to say, yeah, if I'm driving one of these cars, am I going to get a date?
Well, you probably won't get a date considering barely fit one person.
Yeah.
I'm 5'10", and I'm a little bit too big to fit in our car.
Yeah.
But that being said, the rules state that we have to travel at an average of 15 miles per hour. So it's actually not that slow. And our vehicle can probably get up to about 30 miles an hour if we tried on a drag race. But that's not very efficient, so we don't like to do that.
Right. Okay. How many years have you? How many years of competition do you have under your belt?
So I've been part of this club since I was a freshman. I'm a fourth year now, so this is my fourth competition.
Okay, so tell us what the Super Mileage Club there at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo has designed and what you hope to achieve with it this year.
Yeah, so this year we decided to depart from our previous design a brand new vehicle. Well, we definitely improved a lot over the last year in terms of visibility and stiffness of the whole vehicle. We're shooting for the high, over at least an improvement over last year. So we're looking at 1,800 miles per gallon, 2,000 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Take us to the next tier of the competition, yeah.
How in the world? I mean, what kind of horsepower are you actually talking about here?
We're actually not putting out that much horsepower. We have an engine that we took off a Yamaha 50cc scooter. It's putting out about, 1 to 2 horsepower on a good day.
Yeah. And now, is there a practical application for this science somewhere down the road? I know you have a lot of work to do to perhaps get 100 horsepower out of a car that does 2,000 miles to the gallon. But is there a practical end to this story?
Yeah, so there's always a practical aspect that can be extracted from these vehicles, even though they are fairly specialized. Probably one of the biggest things that I can think of is driving technique, and that actually factors a big role into what happens fuel efficiency-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So we use a coast and burn method where we burn for just a little bit, and then we let the vehicle coast for as long as possible.
And then do you steer left and right, in a jerky motion to try to eke out an extra couple of feet?
No, it's to warm up the tires before you get into turn three. You're doing there, yeah.
Yeah, so that's another thing is to try to turn as smoothly as possible. Mm-hmm. And also the steering geometry affects it, the fuel efficiency as well, because when you're turning around a corner, the outside wheel actually is on a bigger radius than the inside wheel. Now, regular cars already have that aspect in mind, but they don't do the burn and coast. Accelerating down the road, you always have your foot on the gas.
I'm going to try that on the freeway in the diamond lane, see how that works out for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, you're a thoughtful, probably analytic kind of guy. It's the Shell Eco Challenge. Shell, I believe, sells petroleum products, including gasoline, that fuels our cars. And it seems to me a bit ironic that they're sponsoring a competition to come up with cars that use as little of the product Shell sells as possible. Had you thought much about that?
Now that you mention it, but they are looking for a lot of energy outreach type thing, projects, and gasoline is not the only division in the competition. There's actually a division for fuel cell, electric, diesel, ethanol, kind of Shell, I believe they call it Shell liquid to gas.
Yeah, yeah.
kind of a special biofuel. So they're actually looking for a bunch of different energy sources for this competition.
Well, the future is bright for engineering students, and that's your practice, is it not? You're an engineer?
Yes, I'm a mechanical engineering major.
Now, where can people follow the action? Is there a website with streaming video or anything like that?
So I believe Shell has a live update on the competition at the Shell Eco Marathon. If you just Google search that, we'll definitely be posting pictures to our Flickr, just CP Super Mileage at Flickr.
All right. We'll be able to find you for sure. And when is all of this happening?
So this year, the competition is from April 8th through 12th, and the actual competition runs will be happening from Saturday morning to Sunday afternoon. So
good luck to you and the crew at the Cal Poly Super Mileage Club at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Sean Michael, thank you very much. It's exciting stuff you're working on.
Thank you very much.
All right, there he goes. That's fun, huh?
Impressive.
1,500 miles to the gallon. All right, and now here's something else that's exciting. And Gonzo.
Huh?
drinking games.
You know, I admire the human race because in the century since we learned how to become intoxicated, we've doggedly continued to try to find ways to make it even more funner. And this is why I salute the people of Mexico for inventing this game I cannot pronounce. It's spelled T-O-Q-U-E-S.
Toques. So,
Toques?
Toques.
Is that how we would say that?
That's what it sounds like.
Like hot Cheetos and Takis, only it's Toques.
Okay, all right. So the idea is you start drinking and you grab two of these metal handles and they start off at about 20 volts of electricity and they zap you with it. You're like, oh, yeah, that's nothing. Give me another tequila shot. Pow, they turn it up to 20 volts.
Yeah.
By the time you get to about 60, 80 volts, your wrists convulse to the point that you cannot let go of the handles unless you scream to turn off the machine.
Yeah.
So you progressively electrocute yourself until, you're
that
out.
That sounds therapeutic.
Doesn't it? It's like when you go to the chiropractor and they put that zappy thing on your back. No, right?
It sounds like an awful idea, Greg.
Really,
what are you talking
about?
It
doesn't sound like any fun at all.
Hey, we love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. Fill out the form. We'll get back to you. We're on Twitter at FAFShow. Facebook.com/PhilHewlettAndFriends. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our theme song composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Gonzo Greg Spillane, for Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports a Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports a Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.